This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. A new podcast the morning after the first night of the farewell tour for Daniel and Henrik Sedin. Jeff Patterson along with Jason Botchford are back at Rogers Arena. It's a lot quieter in here this morning than it was last night, and I thought of you as the noise levels got up there, Botch, because I am concerned. The last time we did this was in Chicago right after we had survived Vegas, and of course it was Vegas that was in here last night. Lots to get to. We didn't have the opportunity to record a podcast last week. We apologize for that. But here we are with all kinds of things to jump on when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. Podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're huge sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express. We tell you that every week. And they're your first overall pick for selection and inventory. If you're in the market for a vehicle, start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. If you want to get out to the showroom, you can find it at 2595 Barnett Highway, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. Lots gone down since we last sat in these chairs and did this.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a lot has gone down, and I'm certainly a mix of emotions about this whole thing. The Sedin era is, like, I wrote about one of the days, like, if you're born in the 90s, the Sedin era is the only one you know, known. If you started covering hockey in the 2000s or got to Vancouver anytime in the 2000s, the Sedin era is the only thing you've ever known. It's the only thing I've ever known. Like, it's my first week, like, I came here as like a part-time, like, those guys, I felt, and I've mentioned this before, but I felt like the older guys bullied me on the beat quite a bit. And they used to call me the temp because I did, when I arrived, I was on like a contract. One of the first weeks on the beat, I can remember going up to Henrik and Daniel and just asking them a simple question about, you know, what's life like away from the rink. And they gave me like these great answers about how everyone thinks they hang out. They don't hang out anymore. And these are the things they do separately. And they live these separate lives and, you know, how much coffee they drink. And it was, like, for no reason. They didn't know me, but they gave me a really good story. And in fact, it's one of the stories, like, I mean, it's simplistic when I think about it now looking back, but at the time, after I wrote it, my editor was like, this is amazing. How did you come up with this? Like, what a great angle. And I was like, I honestly didn't come up with, like, I was thinking, I didn't come up with anything. Of course, I told them, well, no, I think things out of the box. Like, I'm the new guy in town. You won't get your old, you know, cookie cutter stories lined with tons of quotes from Cam Cole that you've seen over the years. Everything's gonna change, and I honestly think it's one of the stories that ended up, you know, getting me a full time, no longer being the temp on the beat. So and it's from there on where, I mean, they are unique to cover. And it sounds fucking nuts to say this, but just because they treat people like normal people, like, there is a basic decency about them. And, like, I asked Henrik about this last night, and he makes it sound so fucking easy and basic and ordinary, but it's not. Like, stars are not generally down to earth. Stars are not comfortable talking to you about their weaknesses and their, you know, the negative aspects or they're about losses or, and they will talk all day breaking down their game after bad ones or, you know, whatever the situation. Like, they're incredibly even tempered. They are incredibly fair to everyone. And they are as close to regular people as you can imagine for two guys. They've paid $74 million each. They probably each have $25, $30 million in the bank. They are freaking superstars of hockey, likely Hall of Famers, and they are heroes. They are hockey gods here in this city. And from that day I met them, and you know, I showed up, you were already here when I showed up, but I mean, long before that until now, they have never changed. They have never wavered. They've never treated anyone any differently. They've never allowed ego to take over them or consume them. And there is something to be said and something to celebrate when two guys who are stars act like that and act like that all the time.
I thought we were going to get a story here about the parallels of a young botch who wasn't treated fairly early on and people didn't believe in him and he rose to the highest heights in the newspaper business, just like Daniel and Henrik. But no, you're
see,
right.
I that happened to me and I'm angry. Like, I fucking hate everyone. And it's my, like, you know, my raison d'être to take them all down one by one. The Sedins wouldn't have that feeling.
But I agree with you. And look, this is what we do for a living. We're in their face on a daily basis, a lot of days, twice a day. And we've seen it. I mean, there are guys, you're right, star players get coddled. They get treated differently by the people around them, by the staffs, by the coaches at times. And it is kind of freaky in some ways just how regular these guys are. And I sat in there on Monday, and I know you weren't down here for the press conference. I mean, the news was out, and here's this press conference, and we worked the room, and the players are, you know, they're kind of welling up, and they're getting a little emotional as they reflect on what the Twins have meant to them and to the team. And then these two guys sit at the podium and handle questions. You know, they stick-handled through that press conference like they've done for 20 years out on the ice. We couldn't break them! Like, I think there was emotion in some of the questioners, some of the media guys.
Yeah.
We could not break them at all!
Yeah, like, I didn't grow up a Canucks fan. I'm not a Canucks fan at all. Like, I'm obviously a fan of these guys. But even last night, like, I'm feeling all like, oh man, it's getting dusty in here myself. And I'm not like that. I can't, but for them, like, they are men's men in a way, like, you know, in a modern world. Like, they are, you know, they still have that aspect where we're not going to show emotion. They never show it. Like, we've been through them, through the highest highs, the lowest lows. They are always the fucking same. And I would suggest it's what has made them so good and has what made them so good here in this market, able to handle it all, because nothing phases them. The biggest criticisms never phased them. The emotion of last night, the roars of the crowd, like all this love just circling around the arena. Like Henrik said, basically he shared one moment where he thought he had to look at the ice and kind of refocus for a second. But you could never, like, you just saw the arms raise up. And in fact, it brings me back to that game against Florida, January 2016. And for them to be upset about something that was said on the ice that day and for that to boil over into, you know, the post-game situation, I mean, that affected them. Like, that, for them to carry it that far, you know how deeply affected them, because normally nothing affects them. And I'm sure, like, it's going to be louder in the finale tomorrow night. It's going to be a more emotional. The ovations are going to linger a little bit longer. Everything's going to be intensified. But I think their reaction is going to be exactly the same. They'll just raise their sticks in the air. And I wouldn't want it any other way. I don't want, you know, I mean, they can react however they want to react. But I thought last night was perfect because that is just so Sedin.
And I thought Travis Green, with one of his best lines of the season, he tried to run in the story about his mom and Goldie earlier, and that kind of, you know, lead balloon. But when he said, like, look, we got a wave out of them. Like, yeah. There you go. That kind of just encapsulated the emotion level of both Daniel and Henrik. But it was fun in here. Right? It was funny because, I mean, they were part of the opening lineup, as you'd expect they would be. So they were announced as starters, got a huge ovation then. And then I kind of thought for two periods, I was actually, I don't know if I was disappointed in the crowd, but it wasn't the loving that I thought it was going to be. And part of that was they were just getting the crap kicked out of them and the shots were 10-1 and they were down, you know, early in the hockey game.
It was the reviews.
And the three, have three reviews just sucked the life out of the building. But that third period was awesome. And the building came to life. The team responded. The Twins were a part of that. And I mean, the shootout, Travis Green had no other choice. I'm not sure that we need to see another shootout attempt if tomorrow night's game goes.
Give them all to me. I want to see them all. Like, that was such a great, like, it was just, Travis didn't give a fuck. They did, like, their Sedin thing that they've always done. Henrik's was predictably, like, it lived up. If you had heard, if people had passed down, like, oh my God, you got to see how bad Henrik is at shootouts. And people, like, it wouldn't make sense to you unless you haven't seen it. It doesn't make any sense. But dude, he has, like, how many points? Like, 1,100? It doesn't, there's no way he could be that bad. And then that display goes on, and it was a total disaster where he felt he was ready for a slapper. He got duped by the goalie, and basically he didn't have another plan. But that lived down to the reputation Henrik has for being terrible at the shootout. And give me I'll take him each of the next two nights. I love that.
You're a braver man than I am. I'm not sure I have.
That was hilarious.
No, I love moments. I'll admit, I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for huge moments. And so, again, I think Travis Green missed a little bit. He should have let Vegas shoot first so that the opportunity could have presented itself that one of them could have put the dagger in, and like, this place would have gone absolute apeshit bananas. Like, so I do want to see that. It gives us something beyond a Canucks Coyotes game to watch on Thursday night as well. But you know what? This has been, and I tried to make this point on the radio. Like, I've heard a lot of people, it's a sad day. It's a sad day. And I understand where people are coming from in terms of the end of an era. But I'm telling you, for the last 48 hours since this announcement went down, like, I found myself watching replays and highlights, and like the smile hasn't left my face. Like, when you see these guys at their height and some of the things, and like, a lot of it's in my memory bank, but there were a lot of highlights I had forgotten about. And I posted one of a playoff game in San Jose, and then people were sending me links to other goals, that, you know, their favorite Canuck goal or favorite Sedin goal. And I watched them all. Like, I've consumed a ton here in the last few days, and I can't get the smile off my face. So yes, it's the end of an era, but I'm painted as the negative guy. I'm choosing to wear this smile proudly here, and will right through the weekend until they say their fond farewell.
Yeah, I've heard this take from you before, and it really like bothers me because part of it, I get, it does, there is a party feel to all of this, and there certainly was as that third period unfolded and the shootout happened. It felt like a party. Like, it felt like, okay, I could go another hour. Like, the game is already, like, incredibly long because of these ridiculous reviews. And why was Gallant, like, he's scratching top six forwards. He's starting his backup goalie. The team has clinched their division, and he's out there on a stupid iPad, like, figuring out, oh, I'm going to, you know, challenge this offside. Just let it go, dude. Like, let us have, like, we in Vancouver, we don't have much. Give us a fucking goal set up by the Twins to a guy who scores his first of all time. Like, have a little presence of mind. But I thought he was totally tone deaf in those situations. But it felt like a party. I was super happy. I see that part of it. But you have to also see the side of us who are sad. Like, this is not going to happen again. And it will never happen again. And it will never be the same. And it'll never be, you can never hope for another throwback Sedin shift. You can never hope for that they go on a run and they, you know, get the power play going again together, and they move the puck like they used to. Like, we'll never, after this week, we'll never see it again. You don't have that twang of sadness inside of you for this.
I'm not the most sentimental guy. Like, I understand that. The logical side of my brain gets that this is the end of the line, and I'm really excited that, you know, in this job, in the first year in this job, I'm going to be in Edmonton. I didn't know that at the outset. I just thought that was going to be a meaningless game in Edmonton, and now it's going to be one of the most significant games for this very reason in a long time for the Vancouver Canucks. They haven't played meaningful games in a while. So to be there to mark the end of an era is something I'm absolutely looking forward to, but I'm choosing not to be sad about it.
I don't know. You can't choose your emotions. Like, you have to be in touch with your emotions. I have a lot of conflicting emotions. I'm happy. I'm angry. I'm fucking angry at this team that they're not decent enough, that the Sedins can't have one last playoff run. I'm angry, like, when I think back and their last playoffs was with Willie was their coach. Like, come on, that's ridiculous. Willie Desjardins was their coach in their last ever chance. They had a decent enough team to win that round, too, if not for that coach. I'm mad about Louis Erickson. Their last 2 years, this is their most common line mate. They're pinned with this slug, Louis Erickson. And then I hear, like, people around here, there's this feeling on the team that Louis Louis can be better now. Like he'll get all the first play power play time and he'll get more minutes in a top six role now that the Sedins aren't there. Watch, Louis is really going to blossom. I'm mad. I'm fucking mad that that's even a take that I've heard here. So I have anger, I have sadness, and I have happiness. Like I have a lot of other stuff in between. Like, do you not have this collection of emotions?
No, I'm choosing to compartmentalize my emotions. All and right. Damn it, I'll do it my way. You're not going
to denial.
No, I'm not in denial at all. I work with a pretty rational brain here, and I knew that this team wasn't going to be a playoff contender. So the idea of them not getting a last run, a last hurrah, a last crack at the Stanley Cup playoff, like, I've watched them for 3 years. I knew that this team wasn't going to be part of the playoffs. So,
but don't you have a part of your brain that says, like, what if? What if they had a different people running the team? What if 4 years ago they had started a rebuild? Like, why do you laugh? Like, do you not think of this stuff?
No,
like this, they wasted their last 3 years.
We agree on that, but it's revisionist history. I can't go back 4 years. Like, we can't take the podcast in a time machine and make things different now. I deal with the here and now, and that's what I choose to do. So the thing, and I pointed this out on Twitter too yesterday, as I've again watched all of these highlights on YouTube in the last little while. Like, look, I get that the cycle game was their bread and butter and they scored a ton of goals off the cycle. But I sort of forgot that they scored a ton of goals off the rush too. Like in their heyday, they could do it all. Like it didn't matter. They could dictate the way the game was going to be played. One of the things that I noticed and the goal that I talked about in San Jose was in the playoffs in a 2-on-1, and Henrik, he holds on so long to the puck and looks like he's totally taken himself out of position and then slides a pass through Antti Niemi. Now, lots of pucks have gone through Antti Niemi. I get that, but not many have been passed through him on a 2-on-1. He's like right down to the goal line and slides it across to Burrows for a tap-in. But the most amazing part of that whole sequence was it starts with a defensive zone face-off. And the way they broke out of the zone to have a 2-on-1, like it went from a defensive zone faceoff, puck goes behind the net, sideboards, and out to center for 2-on-1. And like the breakout was impeccable. And it took me back to a time when Ehrhoff and Salo and Hamhuis and Edler, you know, we just don't see that kind of stuff. So as much as it's about the Twins, it was sort of just, it brought it all back. It came flooding back of just how good that team was in 2011 and really in 2012 as well.
Yeah, like I can, you know, like I always think of the dawn of the, I thought the first Burrows score, a goal he scored, I think it was the Blues game when AV had him there. I thought it was off the rush. Like I just remember that era thinking like, wow, like Burrows has opened up their game to a whole different elements that we didn't really see them be able to do consistently, even with Anson Carter. And by the way, full stop. Alex Burrows is their best line mate. Full stop. He was their line mate when they went back to back and won Art Ross trophies and were 100+ point players. He went through a 4-year run where he averaged around 30 goals a season, all at even strength. They didn't allow him play with them on the power play. This was a guy that was killing it at even strength with the Sedins. No one was better. And it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't, you know, he kept his stick on the ice, stayed in front of the net, and they bounced pucks off his stick. He, like that guy, he's a hockey nerd. Like he knows inside out, he knows the league, he knows every player, he knows all sorts of plays. Like he is one of the biggest hockey nerds that you're going to come across, in the sport. And yeah, he was great at retrieving pucks and he was really good on the forecheck and he had a decent enough shot that worked well with him. But do not discount how smart and then how maybe it doesn't come across because English, you know, it wasn't always his best and he has a certain way about him. But man, he can analyze a game. He can break down a play and no one worked better as a threesome than the Sedins and Alex Burrows.
And Burrows will be here whenever night the Canucks choose to raise 22 and 33 to the rafters. And, you know, that will be the true celebration when we all know and we'll all gather. But Thursday night's going to be something else as well. And I think last night was a prelude. And there were a lot of people, season ticket holders, that I imagine will be at both games. And so when I talked about it being somewhat reserved in the first couple of periods, I wonder if that's part of it too, that, you know, some people were saving their best in terms of response to the Twins for tomorrow night. But I just thought it was damn cool to, there was some life, there was jump in this building that we just haven't seen in years. Like, I guess you'd go back to those playoff series or that playoff series against the Flames, the last time that, you know, people really had a reason to get excited. I mean, there've been the odd, you know, the Leaf game or maybe a visit from the Bruins or whatever, Roberto Luongo's return, but, you know, there have been, let's be honest. I mean, the occasions have been few and far between for the people to truly get invested the way they were last night and the way that they will be tomorrow night.
Well, Henrik took it back further than that. He thought it was, the loudest and most energetic it's been in here since 2011.
See, even he hated that 2015 playoff series.
Of course he did. Look at his coach. Come on, don't get me. But he actually said, I think this is really important that the young guys are being able to see what it's like and what it was like when the glory days, were existing back then. And it was like that on most nights. And in fact, the way that game unfolded was like a lot of games did back then. Fans would be a bit reserved back then, expecting a win, now expecting a loss. And as the game built up momentum, they got more into it. And the third period, I mean, that was as much fun as for sure anytime this season, and probably anytime I think in the Benning and Linden era that I've had. Like, it had, you know, the big comeback, it had great goals, it had the young guys coming through, it had some nice Daniel and Henrik moments, and of course it had the comedy of like the shoe. It was perfect. It was, you couldn't have scripted it any better.
Does it matter what they do on the ice in either of these last two games? Like, you need to see, yeah. Or do you want to see? I mean, you talked about another shootout. You can have it. I'm not sure I need that, but does it matter? Like, what matters in these final couple of games?
Yeah, no, I think it matters. I want them to. I know you were saying, like, when you were on with Matt and I, like, you don't care if they play and they're not a big deal to you and you're fine if they, like, I would have been sick if they only played 13, 14 minutes last night. They got up to 17 because of overtime, and I think he played them a bit in the third. I want to see them play. They were fine. They were good. That second shift they had where they were cycling the puck back and forth, and like, I clipped out like two or three really nice pads. Like, Henrik made his face is facing the end boards, gets his stick down, blind pass through his legs, and lands on Daniel's stick. It wasn't quite, the execution wasn't quite as pristine and as perfect as it once was, but it was there. You could see a tunnel through time of when you felt like for a moment, and I had people I know that were in the stands and were like, this is like the shift. And I'm like, it's not quite like the shift, dude, but enjoy it. And I want to see plays like that. I want to be them to be given opportunities to have shifts like that. They can still play. Like, there is no reason. There's no reason they can't play 18 minutes and 30 seconds, which I think is right around their career average. There's no reason they can't play that in the finale against the Arizona Coyotes and give them as many opportunities as possible. I want to see the cycles. I want to see attempts off the rush. I want to see them try to, you know, pass the puck into the net. And hopefully Markstrom is great on the other end. Cause now what you see often, we saw it last night, is when things kind of dry up or they don't get it in, they're all the Sedins and Sam Gagné was on his ass all around the net. And all of a sudden there's a 2-on-1 going the other way. And Markstrom had to make these big saves. Like, that's been the biggest change here in their last chapter. In their last chapter, like the odd man rushes that are going the other way because of them pressing and not quite getting it done and them not having any kind of speed at all to get into the play to mix it up on the way back.
Virtanen was good last night, but he did rob us all a little bit of an opportunity in overtime. The Twins got one shift in overtime, and they had an opportunity as they broke out. But when Jake took that penalty, obviously the Canucks had to kill off. So there went 2 of the 5 minutes of overtime. So, you know, I think we all would have liked to have seen. And look, I don't have a huge appetite in games that mean something to see Daniel and Henrik in overtime anymore. But again, this is about glory days and throwbacks. So
not their thing. 3-on-3 overtime's never been their thing. Remember that triangle they had to develop in Willie's years? We're just going to try to defend. And they would sit in their triangle in front of the net and hope to keep them out to the outside.
Right. But, you know, you're saying it's not their thing. Neither are shootouts. Again, at this stage, you got to be all in. And generally in overtime, in other games, not last night, but a lot of times, you know, they're still able to create that one chance. And in their glory days, that one chance was all they needed, and they would end games. I mean, Daniel got a ton of overtime goals in his career. Now, you know, if they get that one chance, not so sure that it's a guaranteed goal for them. They sometimes need a few chances to convert, but, you know, it would have been something had they ended the game in overtime, or if either one of them had ended the game in a shootout. So, you know, we have two more games to watch them and do their thing, and it's going to be fun in here. Looking forward to both of the final games. When I said I didn't need to see them play 20 minutes, though, it's because I do. Like, I want to see these young guys. I want to see Vertanen last night, and you pointed it out. There were a couple times, including after his penalty in overtime, like, 3-on-3 is made for Jake Vertanen with that much time and space, and he built up a head of steam, and, like, it was incredible to watch him skate, and Goldie was doing his thing, and, you know, I do want to see Gaudet over these last couple of games as well. So I didn't need to see them play 20 minutes, but I was totally fine with their usage last night, including the shift in overtime. I thought it was funny post-game. I mean, somebody asked Travis Green about, you know, the young guys and the comeback, and he got around to praising Goldie and Jake, but he couldn't go straight to the good stuff. He had to point out that their nights didn't start very well.
Like, why does Delzato never get this treatment? Like, good Branson would never get this treatment. Like, they're not that, like, you know... Like, Delzato, every year, if you go back, every single year he's been in the NHL, he's been a regular healthy scratch. Like, there was all kinds of talk last year, the year before that, that he was on his way to Europe, playing his way out of the league. He never gets criticized. Goldie scores two goals, could have had two or three more, had multiple chances to have more. Vertanen was everywhere all over the ice. And, of course, Green had to grind them down and bring up, you know, I ended up digging it up last night, but this shift where Vertanen gives up the puck three times in the first period and Goldie doesn't cover his man on the point. Like, what a thing to pick out. I was just like, what the fuck? Like, really? He didn't cover his man on the point? Like, come on, Travis. 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 Come on, that's a bit much. You know that.
No, I wasn't surprised, but I was shaking my head there.
I wasn't surprised.
Happens
all the time.
I know, but I wasn't surprised because we've seen that from him all season. Like, he just can't come with the sugar. Like, there's always got to be the needle, the poking, and the prodding there before he gets around to the compliments. And, you know, he did start to butter them up about the way that they had played over the second half. But, like, that first Goldie goal was incredible. Like, around Cody Eakin. And then he picks his spot, and he has Subban going the wrong way, and he snaps it home. The second goal, that was some pretty shady goaltending. But Subban's left pad was in the net. Like, I'm not sure what happened there, but it was a great deflection. I mean, that puck's nowhere close to on net, and Goldie...
It was sneaky good. Yeah, it was for sure. He was, and that's a confident Goldobin. Like, that's... I don't think he makes a play like that even 2 months ago. Like, he's you know, 7 points in his last 9 games, and you... You talked to him, you were quizzing him a bunch after the game. And you could just, like, I don't know if it comes across and when you hear it or even when you write down the words, but there is a certain confidence about him, that aura that kind of hangs over. So, like, I feel like he has an answer, and I feel like there's one more sentence. If I could just get that other sentence out, it would be amazing. But he's super confident right now.
Yeah, and he said it all with a big smile, and you know, English, it's still a work in progress there, so I'm not sure that we get the full Goldie post-game to truly get inside his brain, but I think he sounded like a guy that's pretty happy with the way that he's playing. You know, look, he got shifts in overtime. He was the first guy over the boards in the shootout. Like, that does say, like, forget about him getting out to the point in the first period. Yeah. The coach had come around. He was on board by the time the game ended.
Yeah, and we know how Travis thinks, and that's, he's mentioned this before, like, if you're the first guy out there in overtime, which I think Vertanen got the first shift in overtime, right? And then the first guy in the shootout, that's him giving you a little carrot. And those guys deserve the carrot. I think he could have given them a little bit more love to the media afterward. Didn't have to pick out Cole Tobin not covering his man on the point. He scored two goals, Travis, two. Come on.
Yeah, and in back-to-back games now. He scored against Columbus as well the other day. And really, since Besser's gone down, he's been one of the most dangerous members of the Vancouver Canucks. You can see it. It's coming. You know, he's just got to finish up strong here these last two and find a way to carry that over to training camp as well. Pat Cass from Rogers Arena in between games for the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow night. The big love-in, the final farewell here at home for Daniel and Henrik Sedin, and then the swan song in Edmonton on Saturday. Pat Cass, presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, April, as March was. April's truck month as well. Get up to 11 grand total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. We heard from the GM and the president on announcement day on Monday, and then both making their way through the media here in town as well. Some interesting comments because, look, the question is a natural one. Okay, the Twins go, take 100 points with them. How do you fill the void? And it's sort of a twofold question. One is, how do you replace the scoring points? But also, you know, who steps into the leadership void? And it happened Monday, and it's happened a couple of times since. The names offered up by upper management, not necessarily the names that the fans want to hear.
What a motley crew that they list off, eh? Like, when they start listing off these leaders, we'll fill them in with Good Branson, we'll fill it in with Sutter, and we'll fill it in with Delzato. They even said Delzato. I'm like, come on. Like, this is all, and it just, it feels ridiculous. Like, when you list out these names and you write them, when you actually write them out, Brandon Sutter, Louis Erickson, Eric Goodbranson, Sam Gagne, Michael Delzato. It's a joke. Like, come on. Like, Bo Horvat, by far, like, not even close, is a home run pick compared to any of these guys. And it would be outrageous to pick any. And I honestly believe that even though management is saying all this, I believe deep down that they want Horvat to be the next captain. They want him to be the next leader to usher in this new era of young guys. He's apprenticed under the Sedins. He's ready to go. He's got to be the guy. There's a couple areas I think that he needs to improve on. He needs to be more Sedin-like. He needs to be a little bit less, you know, up and down. And he's good at that. I mean, he's got a pretty even tempered, personality, but. You know, I think the losing, and he's mentioned this, is hard, and he's talked about, you know, winning back in London and the OHL, and he's got to be able to man up and deal with that. And once he figures that out, which I think he should be able to this summer, like, he's the guy. Like, there's no way. Can you really? Delzato, Tanev, Edler, they're throwing out. Linden was saying Edler and Tanev could be the next captains. Like, that's outrageous.
Right, because the logical progression from there is if Edler was going to be the captain, it would mean re-signing him, and it would mean he'd be here for the long haul. The same when you're talking about a long view on a guy like Chris Tanev. You know, it comes back full circle to something's got to give here. I was glad to hear Trevor Linden on the radio yesterday on 1040 say that there is room for improvement on the defense. I mean, I think everybody knows that, but it was just good to hear him say that, and we'll get around to other issues on the defense in a sec here.
I did hear, though, that Linden's wife and Edler's wife are buds. So that impacts, it could impact them not asking him to waive his trade, could impact him maybe being considered, like, he's not being considered for captain. I can't believe it would impact that, but I think it does impact the no trade stuff.
Those locker room speeches would be legendary as he rises in the room. But look, you were there the day, I can't remember where it was along the road here this season, when I asked Travis Green about Bo Horvat and the fact that he hadn't even worn an A at any point this year.
Right.
And the answer, Travis, like he said, it's been considered. He's thought about it. He understands the situation. Like, it did sound like, okay, we're not going to do it this year, but well aware that Bo Horvat is very much the next leader of the Vancouver Canucks. That was my takeaway. And he doesn't need a letter, although I did find it strange down the stretch and through all the injuries that they didn't find a way to slap an A on him. And look, it's a letter. I get that. Maybe it's no deal at all. But my takeaway from Travis Green that day was he understands where Bo Horvat is in the big picture of that locker room.
Well, but who else would you even list? Like, Edler and Tanev are like mutes. Like, they can't be out there representing the Vancouver Canucks. Goodbranson's a third pairing guy and he's not even very good. Like, a large chunk of the fan base wants him the fuck out of here. Delzato, I'm not even sure he's an NHL defenseman. I swear to God, I'm not sure he's an NHL defenseman. Like, he is really poor in and around his net. There's some attributes that he has. There's a skill, certain skill set he has. He can't be a captain. Like Brandon Sutter, a 30-point third line center. Like that's your C? There's no way. Come on. Don't give me that look. There's no way.
But who's worn an A all season? Who we talk about getting the butter from the coach. Like the coach loves Brandon Sutter. Like he does. There's no question that Travis Green has a massive soft spot, among other things, perhaps for Brandon Sutter. And so like, I'm with you. Like in my world, it's Bo Horvat and it's an easy choice. I wrote a column 18 months ago, making him the captain then. You know, I didn't like the idea of stripping the C off Henrik. But if Daniel and Henrik were going to come back for one more year next year, yeah, I would have liked them to have just said, look, we've done our part here. Like here, let's turn this thing over. You be the captain. We'll just be sitting over here if you need us for anything. Again, I'm a believer. Like we see it in other teams. Like Los Angeles Kings have moved on from Dustin Brown, and San Jose Sharks moved on from Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. Like I'm not convinced that a captaincy has to be a lifetime appointment. Like
no, but I think it has to be a guy who represents the team well, represents the city well, and I don't think, like, to me, it's not just a locker room thing. Like, it's a collective, the city, the market thing. And I'm not sure that I don't think there's anyone else it could be. Like, I don't believe this Sutter stuff. I just don't. Well, I'm not accepting it.
Well, how about Erickson? Like, to have that
don't
one.
Even,
No. I'm not. But that name, management brought that name up. We've heard all about how you talked about him. He's going to fill the scoring void. But his name was brought up as a guy that's going to be part of the, you know, he's going to.
Don't even. No.
Speaking of Erickson, you saw it too last night. Like, the game ends. The buzzer sounds. We're all up in the press box. You know, we're kind of watching the handshakes. And you know, a couple minutes go by. Take the elevator down to the ground floor to go to the locker room. And as we step off the elevator, like, there's two nights left in the home careers of the two greatest Canucks of all time, Swedish players, countrymen, and sweet Lou is grabbing a cab.
Like, I thought the place was on fire. I was like, whoa, Louie, is there smoke back there? He was chugging, running out. He couldn't get out of the arena quick enough. I was like, where is he going? You don't want to hang out with your buds here? These guys that got you the $36 million, the 6 years? Because guess what, Louie? You never would have got that anywhere else. And you never would have got that if those guys didn't shine you up at the World Championship 1 year.
Now, in his defense, like I've always found it strange. No, you're looking at me because I'm going to defend him. But I've always found it weird that the guys that don't play are like in a dead heat. It's like they're running the 100 meters to get out of the building right after game. Like, teams in the locker room, win or lose, you know, the guys are going through the whatever they do post game. But the guys that don't play are out of here. It's always been bizarre. So it wasn't just Erickson, but I did find it really weird that last night, with the love in this building, that all the players wouldn't, you know, just hang around for. Like, I would have thought security might have to kick those guys out of the locker room at some point. Time to go, guys. Lights go off. Get out of here. So it was a little bizarre. And did he get a haircut? I think he got a haircut.
Yeah, well, was it a haircut?
It looks like it was a blue streak. It was hard to see, right? Like, he was gone so quickly. I didn't get a full view. But it looked like he got a haircut.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he ran into a lawnmower or something, like had whacked some of those weeds off his head. The clump had been reduced to a more, it almost looked high fashion, the way he had it slicked down to his side. He's got the worst hairstyle and on the team, I think, although Gaudette's is pretty bad. That perm, Gaudette is sporting, is pretty rough. But, you know, what are you going to say? I don't care about the hair. I wish he stayed and hung out with the guys and maybe wrapped his arm around, you know, did some leading, some mentoring. Told Goldobin how great he was. Sat down for Tannen and said, hey, man, next year, hopefully I play on the same line as you, and this is what we're going to do. He didn't talk to anyone. He was gone before he met with the team.
You're right. The podcast shouldn't lower itself to hairstyle reviews of professional athletes. We're more about what goes on the ice. Gaudette's played three games here now. I thought the game against Columbus on Saturday was the best of the three so far. You know, his debut was his debut, and he didn't look out of place, I didn't think, but didn't stand out necessarily. I thought he looked more comfortable, was used a little more on Saturday afternoon. I don't want to say last night was a step back. Again, I was focused on the Twins, so I don't think I paid as close attention to Gaudette and his performance as I had in the other games, but, I mean, I was keeping an eye on him, too. What have you made of three games of Adam Gaudette?
I liked it. I think that he's kind of a little bit victimized by the expectations. People, thought he was going to step in here and be an elite, be a scorer anyway, and do something along the lines of what Besser did a year ago. I don't think he's been put in that situation. I would have loved to have seen him on, in a big primetime role and on the power play. But I understand that Travis doesn't want to do that. And I've long, for years, been told that and understood that Gaudette was going to transition in the NHL. A great spot for him to do it, given his skill set, is as a fourth line center. And in that particular frame and in that role, I think he's been good, man. He skates really hard. He gets back on his forecheck. There was a play last night I meant to clip and show where he was caught. They were pressuring in the offensive zone, and he was caught like right around the net when the Vegas went on transition the other way. Vegas had a 3-on-2. He cut through the middle of the ice, skated as hard as he could, and got in position before the final pass of that odd man rush was completed. And he didn't need to, but he was in position to break up the play. It was a really good, great, nice defensive effort, something you hope to see from a guy like him. And I think people are frustrated that, or some people are, because they're texting me, hey, he's not ready for the NHL. And he's fine. He's holding his own, for the most part. I mean, last night was harder. They were against a really good team. I agree. It wasn't his best total performance, but I think him next year in a fourth, why can't he be? I want to see him as a fourth line center. I think he would be fine as a fourth line center, playing his way up in the lineup and figuring things out in the NHL. That's how Bo, and I don't think there's any better story than how they develop Bo. That's how Bo developed.
That's future Captain Bo to you. From this point forward, that's how he shall be referenced on the podcast. And I think too, I'm with you. I want to see power play, because I know that Gaudette made a meal of the power play in the NCAA this year. Canucks just haven't had many power plays. Like the Columbus game the other day, they had one, and he was out there as part of that second unit. So I think that was a step in the right direction. But they haven't had a night here, and there's a pretty good chance with two to go that they're not going to have a night where there are four or five power plays, because I'd be curious to see how Travis Green would use them in those situations. You've had that smile on your face for a while now, because Markstrom had the new mask on last night. But we found out yesterday after the morning skate, much to your horror, that there isn't just one mask with ears. There are two identical masks with the ears.
Yeah, this actually, someone sent me an Instagram pic last week of Markstrom, this huge smile on his face, and he's holding up the ears mask, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Why are you sending this? Is this from years ago when he had it made? So I asked the guy, when is this from? I don't think he responded to me. At least I didn't see it. And then, lo and behold, I found out last night, where I was like, okay, man, it's time to pump the tires of this Kokanee mask that he's got going that some kid created for him. And Woodley points up and goes, look up there. And I look up, and yeah, there is a brand new ears mask that he just had commissioned. It's in, they're calling it it's in matte style. It's his matte ears mask. He is not going away from this mask. He is doubling down on the ears. And I don't think that there's anything that any of us can do to change his mind, though I am going to try. If I can, over the next couple of days, talk to him, I'm going to say how the incredible outpouring of support the Kokanee mask had. People just couldn't get enough of it. He looked to me way better. He looked more Ryan Miller-ish. He looked like a real goalie. He didn't look ridiculous. I don't get why some people, the ears are actually good. What? The ear mask is the worst mask in the NHL. It makes them look ridiculous. It's a clown show mask. It's a total clown show. Get rid of that mask. Stay with the one last night. To me, I saw him last night. I'm like, holy fuck, he's a good goalie. Look at him.
Do we know, does the new mask have a target on it, though? Thomas Tatar just bowls him over in overtime. Brandon Peary, just not the least bit. Brandon Peary, barely big enough. Apparently, he flew in the middle seat all the way from Chicago to get here for this game last night. Brandon Peary's not a big guy. Overtime, again, no fear whatsoever. Just plows into Jacob Markstrom. Goal is disallowed, as it should have been. But again, like we just watched this all season long, and guys are, it's just open season on Canuck goaltenders, and there's just no fear of any sort of retribution.
No, you know, we're a little bit late in the year for that to be raising that, isn't it? It's gone on all year. Who do you want to step up? There's no one on this team that's going to step up.
Well, I know Archibald wasn't in the lineup last night.
He's not going to do anything. You know that. You saw Mark. He got run by Russo the other game. Archibald was on the ice. He didn't do it. And then right after that, he went and ran Edler, and Archibald just skated off. No one's going to stand up for these guys. You're going to have to wait. They're going to have to change that in the offseason to bring someone else in.
Hang on a second. I'm just going through this long list of leadership that's on this team. They were in uniform last night. Where were they? Where were the leaders?
None of those leaders are doing anything. They're not. We've seen it all year. They're not. And that's one of the changes. Like, remember we asked, or we came up, I don't know, I guess you weren't there, the trade deadline. And I said, like, does this, like, look how bad this team is. It's been bad for years. Does it need a shake up? And Jim's answer to that was, well, you know, we'll see what Henrik and Daniel do at the end of the season. As in, if they leave, the shakeup's on. If they're leaving, guess what? The shakeup is on. And I was one of the big proponents of giving Archibald a chance. I don't think he's lived up to expectations. He's been an okay player, but you need more. Like, if he's going to have that role, and Travis said it himself, he's got to hit guys, and he's got to stand up for guys, and he's got to defend other guys. They don't have a lot of people on the team that do that. And if Archibald isn't going to do that, they got to find someone who will.
Trampkin's the man. I asked Jim last week, actually, here at practice, and Jim said that he believes Trampkin is going to try the National Hockey League again, but it won't be until after next season at the very earliest. So if people are holding out hope, I think I asked the question just because Gaudette got number 88, and I kind of thought maybe that slammed the door closed on BFG, but Jim's convinced that he said he's talked to his agent regularly, and he's convinced he is going to try the National Hockey League again. But he's not the answer, obviously, and not coming here for next season, so we'll see what they do. We got to get to the Ben Hutton situation because you and I have been tracking this all season. I know that you don't think enough people are talking about it, but that's the beauty of the podcast, that if nobody else will watch, we will. We'll take it on. Bring it. But come on. Like, I had to make sure. I put the question to Travis Green yesterday when he said Sautner's in and Hutton's out. You know, and I said, so this is a coach's decision. Ben Hutton is cleared. He's healthy, and he is sitting for Ashton Sautner to play his fifth game in the National Hockey League. And the coach said, yes, coach's decision.
Yeah, and he's obviously talked to management and Jim, and he's got Jim to use the last recall to keep Sautner here and presumably to keep him playing over Ben Hutton, which, like these are the biggest games of the year. Like, these are the biggest, most important games. These are the ones, like, we still hear it. Hey, remember Linden's last game? Even though it was like a 7-1 demolition, people still talk about it. People still remember moments from it. These are the games that will never be forgotten here in Vancouver. And what a blow it is to Ben Hutton to not have been playing last night. And it's not just last night in isolation. It's all of the 12, 13 healthy scratches. It's that Michael Delzato passed him right away on the depth chart. It's that over the course of the season, Pouliot passed him, Biega passed him. The coach multiple times called out his fitness. Too fat, I guess. Can't stay in the lineup. Not maintaining weight. Not staying on his meal plan. Not hitting the right fitness things. Whatever all of the reasons were, it's just been blow after blow after blow of them. But this one is the biggest. Like, Sautner's not some. Like, this isn't Yul Levy coming up and playing ahead of Ben Hutton. This is a guy who's unlikely to have an NHL career, who the coach is giving a little shine to right now. And Green likes him, fair enough. But Hutton was supposed to be the future. Like, back in September, a lot of people were considering him their most promising defenseman. I still think, out of all those guys, Stetcher, Pouliot, any of the youngish guys you can mention, Gudbranson even, he's got the most upside. Like, if he can put it together and he can get a shot and develop a shot, I think he has a chance of being a good top four defenseman in the NHL. I just don't think it's going to work here in Vancouver. I think something's rotten in the relationship between coach and player, and it'll be the blow of blows if in the last Sedin, like, I think even on when the Sedin announcement came. Like Ben Hutton was talking about what it was like. This is a guy who's been on, has been their teammate for 3 years, for 3 years. And Sautner basically just walked off the street and is starting ahead of Ben Hutton. Like if that happens tomorrow night, dude, that's the blow of blows.
Yeah, and I fully expect that it will. Like, I just don't, like you said, I mean, they used the last recall on Sautner. Like, why would you have him here and sit him? So, you know, Delzotto.
That's what's right. Like, you have, like, come on. Like, Hutton, I would think, has done enough to start in the Sedin's last home game. You don't think so?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, honestly. I've got to believe that the bridges have been burned and that it's irreparable damage. And so I can see the coach saying, no, Sautner's here. We've used our recall. He's going to play. The team has been playing better of late, although they've given up a bunch of goals in the last couple of games. So, you know, if you're trying to base it on performance, but Delzotto is suited up for all 80 games. There's no turning back there. They're not going to sit him down for a game. And Alex Edler's playing like 30 minutes. Why is Edler playing 30 minutes a night, every night?
I don't get it. Like, I don't, like, this was not happening like for a long time, and all of a sudden like the coach has just totally fallen in love with Alex Edler. Like he can't get enough of him. Like I think he played 3 minutes, well over half of overtime. Like I think,
no, he's up over four. He played 4 of the 5 minutes.
What? No
including,
way.
Including 2 minutes on the penalty kill.
Oh my god!
But wow. That's what future captains do, Botch.
Someone tweeted me. Worth noting that when Hutton arrived in Utica, right after college. He played 4 games, scored a beauty, and was sent home for the rest of the season during the Calder run and called out by Green 4 months later. He was called out by Green, and then 4 months later he was in the opening night lineup. So, I mean, people are tracing it back that there's been some conflict between Green and Hutton going all the way back to when he first showed up. Maybe it just comes down to a fitness thing. It doesn't seem as a guy who's in the right shape that he wants. But before Green got here, Hutton was fine. He was fine. And he was fine the first month. He was good.
Right, but the president went on the radio yesterday and listed off all the attributes of everybody. Like, it was a long list, whether it was leadership or upside in terms of development. And he went through every guy. Like, if you had a checklist, you would have checked, you know, Delzotto, Gudbranson, Tanev, Edler, Stetcher, Pouliot. He probably mentioned Sautner in there somewhere. Check, 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 check. And not a peep. Like, not even a mention of Ben Hutton anywhere.
No, I mean, maybe it was an oversight, but it sure felt like he was going out of his way not to say Ben Hutton's name. And the unfortunate part to all of this, if it really does, if you can connect the dots all the way back to when they met in college, is that it could have been predictable. It certainly was predictable over the course of the season. We could see it happening. We could feel it happening. And in December, I remember us talking, you know, he's not smiling anymore. He's inside his own head. They're losing Ben Hutton. And for the, it's going to look bad if the Canucks, it could look bad. It could. I mean, maybe they make a great trade and get a great return for Ben Hutton still. But it feels like a coach soured on a player and Canucks management saw it happen and didn't make a move to try to sell high on him as quickly as possible before guys like Sautner are playing ahead of him. Because when guys like Sautner are playing ahead of Ben Hutton, how can he have any value at all in the trade market? Like, I would suggest he actually has negative value right now because he makes the $2.8 million for next year. So even if you're a general manager and you believe, like, okay, his analytics are good, I believe in this guy, I want to take a chance on him, how do you know that your coach isn't going to do what Travis Green just did to him? And if he does, you've got $2.8 million sitting in your press box, and that's not good for anyone. That's not, I don't care how much the cap is going up or whatever, you don't want $2.8 million players sitting out of your lineup.
I direct your attention to the far end of the ice where Jacob Markstrom is out working with Dan Kluche, and the ears are back. The mask, it was a one-night stand. I think it's going to be auctioned off, so it's probably not even his to use anymore. And the ears have returned on Jacob Markstrom. All right, to wrap things up here, we're going to do a season wrap-up. Here we're going back to Woody's pub out in Coquitlam next week. Okay. We'll get some details out on social, but certainly you're encouraged and invited to come on down. We had fun there the last time, some prizes, some giveaways, and we'll talk hockey and put a bow on this season.
I think guys were getting like free beers and stuff. Like it looked pretty, Looked pretty fun, man. If I was going to go out drinking, that would be a place I'd be.
Free is always a good price. So there's that. And just in closing, I have to say, because like 2 weeks ago when we did the last podcast, I remember saying right off the hop, like I couldn't believe the love that we felt in Vegas, that morning skate, like everybody filing in. The podcast, Botch, J-Pat, guys had flat J-Pats. Like it was ridiculous. Like everybody, look, I appreciate it. But so this time the Sedins announced their retirement Monday morning. And, you know, this wave of emergency podcast. And like, I know we made that pledge once upon a time, way back when. But
didn't we do one? We did one once.
Yeah, I think on, was it Jim's resigning? I think it was. Yeah. When Jim resigned, we did one. But one's not enough, apparently. Like, the number of people, you promised, where's the emergency podcast? Come on, like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, look, we have jobs, first of all. We each have jobs. I was here at the rink. You've become a radio darling on top of all the work you do at the province. So you were sitting in the afternoon. You were doing some TV. I was doing videos with Farhan. Like, we're busy. Like, there's lots going on. The podcast is a production of opportunity. Like, it all has to sort of come together. Right. And so that day, it didn't. But, like, the vitriol, like, people settled down. Like, we'll get to it. We're not hard to find. Like, our thoughts and opinions on anything on the Canucks, yeah, they're out there. Like, it's not that difficult to know what we're thinking. So we got around to it. It took a couple of days, but we wanted to see last night and what that looked and felt like. And you're okay with the noise? Like, everything's okay?
Yeah, like, I'm okay with... I'm not okay. Like, I love the feeling of an organic sporting event where it's natural and there's noise and there's cheering. And yeah, I will remember. It was, like, as Henrik said, it was great. It was a great throwback. It was nice to hear the building alive, electric and alive again. I don't like... you're bringing me back to Vegas... And the speaker system that they had cranked up with that EDM, like, bass that the guy, it was obnoxious. It was obnoxious. Like I said, and I've said it before, the guy had it playing before the game. I was screaming as loud as I could in the fucking ring. Like, if I did that right now, every single buddy in here, like, see way over there, Kluche and Markstrom, they would hear me. They would hear me.
And well, Markstrom would hear you because he's got four ears.
He's like 300 feet away. He would hear me. But in Vegas, because of that sound system and that bass that they were cranking out, if I screamed, and I did scream as loud as I could, the only person that could hear me was you because you were a foot away.
And I tune you out. So, it was a fun night. Thursday is going to be a terrific night as well. And I'm curious to see what Saturday looks like and how the Edmonton Oilers go about saluting two guys that have been rivals and that have owned them over the years. But at the end of the line, I think the Oilers owe it to Daniel and Henrik to make some sort of mention and maybe an acknowledgement on the Jumbotron as well. If you're lucky enough to have a ticket, enjoy tomorrow night's fond farewell. And again, we'll wrap up the season at Woody's Pub out in Coquitlam next week, a live podcast. You're invited, and we'll get the details to you in social in the week ahead. Podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center, where everyone is a part of their hockey family. Check them out online, EagleRidgeGM.com. I want to thank the fine folks at Eagle Ridge for supporting the podcast for another season of Vancouver Canuck Talk. For Botch, this is Jay Pat. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast here on Province Radio.